On the parak of the Gemara of Eda Zora, we're now on Daf Samach Beis, Omad Aleph, 62A. Tonight is the 16th of May in the year 2007. I took a look at one of my early tapes of Avodah Zorah. See, we got started actually in June of 2003.
On
Avodah Zorah?
On
Avodah
Zorah.
I can't believe that.
Yeah, right.
Oh,
God,
to give you strength to be able to.
Amen. Yeah, right. Goldie reminds us, you were picking one that wouldn't be too long. Yeah, there are a few that are longer than this. Okay. Well, I think we're doing pretty well, though. Baruch Hashem. All right. The Mishnah begins by saying, "Asecher esaporel laseisi mei v'yeinesach sechore osor." First line. Okay. Right. So, what does it mean? So, it starts in by saying, "Asecher esaporel." If you hire a workman. Yeah, but who hires and who is the workman? It's a goy who's hiring a workman. Okay? A Jewish workman. A Jewish workman. Okay? And what did he hire him for? He hired him, that he should work together with him at producing Yain Nesach. Remember, this is wine that's used as libations to the idols, right?
Yeah.
It's not Stam Gala wine that we're talking about. That's called Stam Yenom, as we'll come across the expression too. But this is real Yain Nesach, okay?
So Yain Nesach is what the Goyim use for.
They use as libation to the idols, exactly.
This is a translation
of what?
Nesach.
Nesach is from the word which means to pour. Is a libation. Right. Yeah.
Huh?
Why? He probably figured that this the guy, either he could do manual labor, or maybe he was skilled or something or other in wine making. Whatever the reason, Talmud doesn't go into that, but it wants to know what happens now with the pay.
Well, I was
going to
say, is it permissible for a Jew to work?
Is it permissible? Well,
that?
We'll see in a second. Okay. In a second, gedult, you know that expression? Okay.
All wine that's, let's say, is our wine today, that doesn't have a hefshir on it, or is that...
It's really stam yenom, it's called.
Stam.
You know, stam in the Veltalin, stam, right.
Use the word
right.
Stam in your...
Yes, of course. Ordinary. Right.
Ordinary wine.
Yes. Okay, so if this guy hires a Jewish workman to work with him at the production of the Yain Nesach, right, then Sechore Osor, then you know what? He's not allowed to accept pay. His pay is prohibited unto him. Okay? Rashi explains, first of all, Ovid Kechovim, right? An idolater, Shesechas Israel, he hired a Jew, Laseisimei Melacha, to work with him, Be'ayin Nesach, right? Lehariko, he says, in order to pour it, Mekli El Kli, right? Pour it either from one vessel to another, right? Oh, Lehavir Chodis, Bemarkim Lemarkim, or to move a barrel from one place to another, right? This is the point that Rashi is stressing right now. I mean, it's not written in italics, it's written in Rashi script. but we have to interpret it as if it was written in italics, okay?
What did he say?
Meaning that this is real Yain Nesach that we're talking about. Shenis Nasech, which is poured out, La Vedas Kechavim, you know, to the idols. The Stam Yain. Now, as far as ordinary wine, that the Gemara is going to ask a question about afterwards. Okay?
It's not logical.
Right.
It's not logical. Why would a boy hire a Jew and know that he's forbidden to take any wages for it?
The guy gives him pay.
So what does he do with the pay? Is he not allowed to
use it? He's not allowed to use it. That's
so
the
what
answer.
Does he do with it?
He has to throw it into the Yama Godel.
Well, then isn't that...
He has to throw it into the Great Sea.
Isn't that intended to keep them from wanting to work like that?
Yes. Yeah, obviously.
If he needs a job for pay...
Right.
This isn't what he's going to take if he can't use the money.
Right. Right, 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 right. However, we haven't yet finished. We didn't read the next couple of words, okay? All right. Okay, right. No question, okay? Then the next sentence says, that's the middle of the line two, Sechori la'asei simei melech acheres. If he hired him to do some other job, so afal pi shemaloi haver li chovish al yed nesach memarkim lemarkim. So even though the tzgoi says then to the workman, move this barrel of wine of yed nesach, right, from this place to this place, right, sechoi mutar. Okay, then in that case the wage is permitted to the Jew.
He's doing something else.
He's doing something else. That's the answer.
So does that include the wages he got from pouring the wine from one barrel to another?
Yes.
Huh?
Yes.
It would include that too.
Yes, if that's not what he stipulated with him. If he didn't stipulate with him, I want you to work with me in making Yain Nesach, right? All that he stipulated with him is, I want you to help me move this barrel over here, or I want you to help me pour from this container to another container, and so on and so forth. So in that case, you can accept the pay. Okay? So it depends, in other words, how is it phrased?
Right.
Then incidentally, if he says, you know, do this and so on. Right. Okay? Then they continue. This is sort of like a parallel situation. Okay? Okay. The guy hires a donkey. Okay? What does he hire a donkey for? Because he uses it for transport. Okay. It's as simple as all that. Didn't have a wagon, so he used a donkey to carry it. Okay? Right? So, in order to... Okay, I'm not talking about a goy. I mean, a goy can hire a goyish donkey, obviously.
No, but, you know, the donkey belongs to the Jew.
Right, donkey belongs to the Jew. Okay, right, okay. So, at any rate, in order to bring... with the donkey, you know, to carry on it, the Yain Nesach. So, Sechor Asur, in that case, the money that the Jewish donkey owner receives from the Goy is prohibited, right? On the other hand, Sechor Leishiv Alecho, if he hired the donkey from the Jew in order to sit on the donkey, right, get a ride on it, so even though the goy put his container on the donkey too, but nevertheless, in that case, the hire is permitted. The money that got the hiring is permitted. Okay. So it all depends on how you phrase it. It's what's going to work out that. Right.
You add something on just to make it kosher, so to speak.
Right. No, you have to understand. I mean, the rabbis also were concerned that here a poor workman, for example, needs the pay. I mean, but shtaych avedazora, right? So what do you do? So it all depends on how you give it away. Period. Okay.
All right.
Yeah. So Gemara starts it by saying, "My tamor." For what reason is the money that he gets prohibited? So if we say, and this is something we had again and again and again and again, right? That Yei Nesach, right, is prohibited to have any hadar, to have any benefit whatever from it, right? Then in that particular case, the Gemara says, look, Zachari Rabbi also. I mean, that's the case, then you have to say that even if, the whatever he rented him for and so on is also prohibited, right? So, what they're trying really to say, however, over here, what are they objecting to? They're objecting to the fact that they say that there is no consistency. There's no consistency.
Yeah.
Case A, right. Case A says that the zakhar is prohibited, and case B says that it's permitted, right? Whereas, if they were to be consistent, so case B would also say, what? Dealing with Yain Desach? Forget about it. You get nothing. You get no pay, no reward, whatever for it. Right, right.
Okay.
So, if that's the case, so now they're going to look for other cases.
In other words,
where
they're objecting to adding on something to making it possible for them to keep the wages.
Right.
That's not being consistent, that's what you're saying.
Right. How can they justify it if they're dealing with the Yadnesa?
Right.
So they want to see, are there other cases? Sure. Right, right. So they want to see now, are there any other cases where you have a similar situation? So this is what the Gemara is now going to go into. Okay. So let's say, Hare Orlo, the Kile Hakerem, Da Asur Ba'ador, right? Okay. Orlo, remember, this refers to the first 3 years that a tree produces fruit, right? That you're not allowed to use it, right? And so therefore, what would happen if a guy wants to sell orlo fruit? The answer is?
Not allowed to do it.
Not allowed to, right? Okay. Kilei HaKerem, this is literally a vineyard in which you have a mixture of different plants. And as remember that we have what we call kilayim. What is kilayim? It's a mixed seeds, exactly, right. So,
what would that be then? I don't understand.
When you plant, you have to plant separately.
I understand.
This,
but, I mean,
what kind of stuff?
If you have fruit trees.
Yeah.
What are you saying? You mix it with trees that don't have fruit, or the I don't know, I understand.
Specifically, the Torah itself prohibits it with a carom, with a vineyard.
I know
that. A vineyard, it's like, but you know, the Chachamim come along and they extend the whole business of kilayim to, in general, mixing different seeds together,
yeah,
so that it shouldn't be.
I don't understand.
They shouldn't be one on top of the other, different kinds. They should be each different kind should be in a separate area.
Different plots.
Yeah, make a little, let's say, a furrow, a row, or something in between them, so that you know you're not mixing them together in the same plot.
So you have a tomato plot and a cucumber plot,
right?
But you're not putting a tomato and a cucumber and a tomato and a cucumber.
Yeah, more or less, that's the way it should be. Right, right. All right, but that's mixing them together in the same plot of ground, you see, that's the idea. But specifically, the Torah talks about carom, vineyard.
Talk about what?
Carom.
Vineyard, right. As I say, the Chachamim extended this business. All right, so what is the rule? All right, the case of Orlo or Kilei HaKerem, they are Surin Ba'adar, right? They're not allowed to have any benefit whatever from them, with the known, but nevertheless, here we have a Mishnah which says, not over here, I mean, we have a Mishnah which says, Mechoron, the Kiddush B'domehen, Nikudashis. So this we have to understand. What is Kiddushin? Kiddushin is the first stage of the marital relation. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, we think in terms of an engagement, But kedushin is actually a more serious type of an engagement. But it was not actually getting married yet. In those days, they would have an interval between kedushin and between the nisuin, the actual marriage, which took place under the chuppah. Okay? The kedushin, as I say, we're taught, the minute right, be taught, he says, harayat mekudeshet li, and he has to give us something of value. Has to be at least worth, as we say, a shavuot, it has to be worth at least a pruta, whatever, that's a minimum amount of money, but it doesn't have to be in the form of money. We use a ring today, but it doesn't have to be a ring. It could be any other object of value. Okay? So, here is the question. Right. If the orlop, you're not allowed to have any hado or whatever from it, then how come along comes the Gemara in Kedushin and says that, you know, if you use the fruits of orlop in order to, as a thing of value, in order to affect a Kedushin, so we say that these Kedushin are valid. You understand?
Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, I mean, once the Kedushin took place, then it means that they would be betrothed to each other. And in order to break up such a union, actually, she would require a get already, even though they haven't lived together yet. Right. Yeah. Right.
Which was not yet 3 years old.
Yeah, right. And therefore,
and
it was supposed to be valid. Right. Supposed to be destroyed and not eaten, right?
But she's going to, she's got it as value.
She got it as the value, right? And therefore the kedushin are considered valid, right?
But she can also use the fruit. Or does she have to throw it away?
She'll probably have to throw it away. It's
well,
so good to her either.
That's the question.
Right, so good to her either. Right.
Yeah, what kind of a business is that?
Right, right. But for the moment, it had value, that's all.
It had value
just to affect the kedushin, right.
But it doesn't give her authority to use it.
But if she throws it away, it's no longer valuable. So she loses the value, so it's no longer a symbol of value.
For the moment, it's a symbol of value.
For the moment, but
for the moment. Okay.
I think it's stretching your thing.
This is why, I mean, a ring of, you know, this is more permanent already.
There must be other things.
You know, I've heard of it, yes. They would give a silver gupple, a silver lepel, or something or other, I've heard. So he gave a watch to the collar, or something like that. As long as it has value and can be attested to, then it's worth at least more than the proof that you see. It's
the equivalent of the watch right. business became very much an engagement gift.
Today, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, not, I don't know about today. I'm talking going back.
Even
to
today,
when
right.
When I was a girl. The first gift that you got was this one.
Right.
Before the ring.
Yeah. Okay. So.
Yeah.
Right. See, let's go back again. What does it say? Tanan, right, that we have learned that the Chora and the Kidesh but the Mehen, right, that if he sold it, first of all, he sold this fruit. To whom could he sell it? Maybe he sold it to a goy. I don't know. It's a possibility. But at any rate, seeing there should not have been any value in them because it's supposed to be not to have any hador from it, right? And yet, with the money that he got for the sale of this fruit, well, he used it in order to be betrothed. Right.
Okay.
But the point is that it's a valid condition. It's valid condition. Well, if you remember, I mean, we studied condition, God, how many centuries ago? Must have studied condition at least 20 years ago or something like that, right? And one thing we learned over there, for example, if a man says, I betroth you on condition that I'm a tzaddik or something like that. On condition that I will be a tzaddik.
Yeah.
It's valid. It's valid. It's valid. It's valid. Of course, even that also has some value.
So, if he's not, do they get an annulment?
Well, now that brings another problem. Is this what you call a mekach toros, which means a deal that you consummated by mistake, in which case then it is invalid, or do we say that b'di'evad, nevertheless, right, b'di'evad, remember, it's done, so if it's done, then it's valid, right, right, yeah.
All right, good.
Okay. Yeah, so the kid came to us about the heart, not the core of the kiddish, but the name is the kiddish. Ella, or the typeface is Demov Kabiris Koychovim. All right, so getting back to, you know, the money that the guy would get, you know, for working together with the goy and producing Yai Nesach, right? So we say that in that particular case, it's almost just as if it were the idol itself that he was worshipping. This is the reason why it's prohibited. This is the way Rashi understands it. He says, Elohorel v'teifes es demov kamiz kechum. He says, so the money is as if it were an idol. The kevish of this nasech lamiz kechum, in as much as his wine is poured out as a libation for the idol, so in that case this wine becomes as if it were idolatry, and the money that we had, you know, is prohibited. So in that particular case we have to say that apparently they're being stricter than the case that they cited in Orlo. Because of what? Because Yad Nesach is so serious that they want, you know, to be more strict,
yeah,
in that connection. So we continue.
All right.
Or to none.
So in other words, the fact that it's Yad Nesach, that makes it that's a very strong, strong point.
Right.
Anything
right.
Else, not,
it's correct. Right, right. All right, then they bring another example. We have Orla, Kilekam, so now they bring the Hare Shavias. How about Shavias? Shavias, remember, means the seventh year, the sabbatical year, and we know that what is the rule concerning things that grow?
Well, the land of fallow is there, not using...
Right, the land itself has to lie fallow, not allowed to till it, plant it, etc., right? And what grows by itself, that's what we call Sophia, right? Or what grows because it has been planted, you know, before the beginning of the seventh year, you're not allowed to do any business with that. Instead, it's the Ochla, the Lelischer, as we'll see. It's meant, I mean, the Torah says the Ochla. It shall be unto you the Ochla for eating, okay?
What?
For food, for eating, the chol, the chol, the basecho, etc., you know, to you, your maidservant, etc. I mean, everybody. So, and therefore, you have to share whatever you have that grows in that year, not only with your other fellow human beings, but also with whom? With hamtecha, right? Right, the beasts, the animals also, you have to make sure that they have food to eat, okay?
Yeah,
right. So, are you allowed to sell what grows in your field during the seventh year? Because we know it's prohibited, right? So they say, all right, let's go back. How about the story of the seventh year? The Tefesa says, where it applies to the money also, right? We're to none, and yet we learned, Oemer the Poel, if you say to a worker, Heloch dinar zeh, here is a dinner, I don't mean D-I-N-N-E-R, but I mean D-I-N-A-R, okay. Okay. Here is a dinner, okay. Latin word was denarius, okay. Lekotli bo yerek hayom, and I want you to go out and gather me some vegetables today. Okay? Sochoro also, that in that particular case, that money that he promises him is prohibited to the man. Can't have any hadar from it. If he said to him, however, Lekot li yerek hayom, I want you, he says, to bring in some food for me today, okay? Some vegetables. Sechor mutar. Then in that case, he gives the money afterwards, then what? Then that money is okay. In other words, it's sort of parallel to what we had, where if he says to him, I want you to work with me in making a nesach, right? We say it's also. But if he says to him, I want you to carry this barrel, put it over here, pour me from this one to that, and so on, since that's what he hired him for, and he didn't hire him specifically, make a nesach with me, so then he can keep the money, right? So it's a similar situation over here. So they say it's a parallel, okay? Yeah, it's a parallel.
I don't think so.
You don't think so? Okay,
no,
why not?
Why? Because he was talking about vegetables, okay?
Right.
Tell the worker to go out and buy and pick some vegetables.
Right.
There's not necessarily involved here at all, right?
Correct.
Okay. Then you tell him, pick me a vegetable for me today, okay? So he's picking other vegetables with it at the same time.
Yeah,
so what has that got to do with idol worship?
It's nothing to do with idol worship. What it has to do is a parallel situation about the money. If he gives him money and he says, go and do this, then it's prohibited, because
why?
It means that I want you to go and to violate the rules of the Shavuos by going and getting rewarded for it.
These vegetables are going during the Shavuos period.
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay.
But if on the other hand, you know, he says, I want you to go and bring in some vegetables for me, it could be that the guy, I mean, is working or something, works around the house or something like that, and he says, I could use some of the vegetables out in the yard over there or something like that. The garden, right? And then he gives him some money afterwards. Okay, call it a tip, whatever you want to call it, you understand?
Yeah.
But, right, right, right. So Rabbi Bohu was said to the name of Rabbi Yochanan, he says, Kenas hu shekodsu rabbonin, right, v'chaborin v'yay nesach. Both, this is a fine that the sages find donkey handlers, right?
Right.
And also Yainesach. Yainesach, Choda Barad, Yainesach, because just as we've said in the Mishnah, so as we explained it, and Chaborim, Mahi, but how about donkey guys, donkey lenders, donkey owners, what is it, right? He said, the Tanya, as we learned, the Gemara, it says, "Achamarin shehoyu oisin malocha beperish vius, secharon shevius." Marischal shevius, ilaymo de alvidon lehu sechar beperish shevius. Nipsa say pareyachirim beperish vius. Ater amor leochlos. So okay, let's take it word by word over here. Okay, you had donkey. Let's say a donkey owner, right? He's hired. Shehoyu oisin malocha. And he was hired to do work with payroll shavis, in other words, with fruit or, produce that grows in the seventh year, right? So, nim sozer payroach hevim payroach shavis, right? So, in that particular case, the situation then is that he's being paid for what? For doing work with the fruit of shavis, right?
Which is forbidden.
That's what it says. When the Torah says the ochla, right, that this fruit has to be for eating, the low, the schara, and not to do business with. Right.
Business.
Right.
Spoiler.
Right. Yeah, of course. Schara. Right, absolutely. Yeah, right. Literally merchandise, what it really means to do business. Right. Yeah.
That's funny. I can go further. I get so excited.
So the Eloi says, rather you have to understand the Kadosh Secharon Bekedusha Shavis, that the money that they earn for whatever, you know, the whatever work that they're doing with the fruit, you know, with the fruit of Shavis, the fruit of Shavis is called Kadosh. It's called Kodesh. That's what Torah said. We read it this past week, you know. Torah says that Kodesh to Elohim has to be Kodesh, right? So Min HaSodeh Tachles to HaSoh, right? You are to eat whatever food there is in the field, etc., etc. So this is called Kodesh, okay? And if that's Kodesh, then in that particular case, the money is also Kodesh. So what can you do with money that's Kodesh? Can't use it for yourself. Because who does money that's Kodesh belong to? As long as it's the best of pictures. Exactly. Okay. So now the Gemara says, oh, be Kodesh. Is it really Kodesh? Is it really holy? The whole Tanya, did we learn Gemara, which says, or it's actually a Mishnah in this particular case, so Omer Lefoil, somebody says to a workman, Heloch Dinazeh, right, here is a dinner, or a Koti Yerik, I mean, we had this already before, or Koti Yerik Hayom, right, and I want you to gather me vegetables today, Sechore Mutor, then is, The money that he gets is permitted. But it's a little bit different than the reading that we had before, you understand. Whereas the Kotli Yerek Bo Hayom, in other words, I want you to gather me vegetables today with it or for it, in other words, for this money that I'm giving you, then in that case, right, then Sechorios, then in that case the money is prohibited. Okay. What about Abaye? So Abaye said, "Li oilon yahavinun le sochar mepeiro shavis." Right? It says you can really give him a reward by giving him to eat what fruit of the shavis. Okay. With the kar kasha leochlo v'lo l'schayra. And if you ask me the kasha, why? Then the Torah says it's only meant to be eaten and not to do any business with it. So he says, Yahweh Nihalei B'tzad Heter. So the answer is, he gives it to him in a permissible way, Kiditnan, as we have learned. And now they bring in a parallel from Master Sheni to show that it all depends how you say it. Okay? See how precious words are. Kiditnan, we learned in the Mishnah, Master Shady, it says, Lo yomar odem l'chaveiro. A person should not say to another person, all right, let me get the next sheet, on the base, should not say to another person, Ha'alei li peiros hanoli rishonayim lechalek. Bring up the fruit for me to Yerushalayim. Remember, Maaser Sheni is the tithe which is given in the second and in the fifth years of a seven-year cycle. The cycle of tithing worked as follows, according to Torah, okay? You have 6 years followed by, of course, Shavuos, right? Shavuos, you don't give Maaser. It's a normal rule, because if it doesn't belong to you, you don't give it, okay?
You have nothing to give.
Well, there are other things. Yes.
Does that mean you're not allowed to eat it as well as to...
No, on the contrary, you are permitted to eat it. The Torah says specifically, it's the ochla, it's to be eaten.
Okay, that's always bothered me.
Right.
You can't eat your own product.
Definitely, you can eat your own product. And other people are also welcome to come in to also to help themselves. Exactly. They're not allowed to do any business. It's only for their own purpose of eating. That's all.
So I have a question.
Sure.
I don't know if that's what we're talking about now. If the man says, I need some food,
Send
me some food,
yes.
And he brings to the work, the worker brings to his boss,
right.
The Jewish worker brings to the non-Jewish boss,
well, no, even to a Jewish boss.
Right, so
we're talking about Jewish boss.
He brings
right.
this food to,
yes.
to the boss.
Right.
And the boss says, oh, there's really more than I need. Why don't you take this part of it?
He could do that.
Yeah. And that's not pay.
No.
That's sharing
right.
the food.
Right. What if he gives him money?
Yeah, but technically...
Yeah.
Well, technically he could have gone and get the food for himself as well.
Right.
So it's not
pay. Right. But if he pays him,
yeah, that's
then the wording is as follows, as we saw. I mean, that if he says, here is a dinner, and I want you to go out and do it, so then in that particular case, that's no good. But if he said, go and bring me, and then he gives him a dinner afterwards, that's a reward. Okay. Right, that's it. Exactly. Right.
Reward, he gives a reward every
yes, right.
It's okay.
That's okay. Because he didn't stipulate that.
No, it's the same as
right.
the wine
situation. Exactly. So now they bring in the parable case from Maaser Sheni. So I started to tell you that with Maasers, you know, tithes, you have a certain cycle. The first year and also the fourth year, of course, it runs in 3-year cycles, and then you have Shvius. And then you start all over again, okay? So the first year, you have to give 1/10 to the levy. That's called Maaser Rishon, okay? And you also have to go to Yerushalayim and bring Maaser Sheni. In other words, another 10th of what's left, I mean, you have to bring to Yerushalayim and enjoy it over there. Okay,
after the
first year. Second year is the same story, but in the third year, instead of Maaser Sheni, they have instead Maaser Rishon. You have to give whatever that has to be given to the poor rather than for you to go to Yerushalayim and enjoy it. Torah also says, I mean, that if the fruit that you have, for example, will perish on the way to Yerushalayim, but in that particular case, you can sell it, and then you have to take the money and put it aside, take it with you to Yerushalayim, and use it only for that purpose, for food in Yerushalayim. So enjoy it, okay? It's part of the Samachta, that you should rejoice before God in Yerushalayim, okay? So he says to him over here, Haloli Peres, Haloli Yerushalayim, I want you to bring this fruit for me up to Yerushalayim, the Chalek. And there it says, we will share it. Okay? You'll take, and I'll take. That's why she says, Shatitel Shab Chalek Mahem, you'll take your share of them. The Osir Lefroa Chobo the Maaser Sheni, because they're not allowed to use Maaser Sheni for any business purposes. You know, to pay off debts or something like that. The Afagav Shagamzer Echle Yerushalayim, even though they say also he is in Yerushalayim. All right. So, at any rate, Avol Omerlo, don't tell him that, you know, that you bring it up so that you'll have a share in it. Avol, but he says to him, Avoloi, Ha'alem Le'ochlom L'shtoysom Yerushalayim. Just bring them up to Yerushalayim so that people can eat them and drink them, right? And I'm giving you a matana. In other words, he's not making a contract to share with him. But instead, he's telling him, I'll give you a matana over there when you get to Yerushalayim. And so the same matana, the food and so on, so you too will be able to enjoy it. This reminds me the business, you know, that we have in the Torah. What does it say about the lulav of the Esrek, the Avraminim?
Okay.
What does it say about the four species that we have, about sukkahs?
It is, you know.
It's written over there, Chaka Sukkos Tase Lechon, right? You have to make it for yourself. So therefore we say that when you buy a lulav of an Esrek, it has to be yours. What happens, you come to shul, right? And you bench lulav and esrog, and another guy doesn't have it. What is the procedure? You have to give it to them as a matana.
A matana?
As a matana. And then he gives it back to you, because we say that a matana lahatzir shmo matana. That a matana that is given back to you, it's still considered a matana. So when you give him the matana, it means that technically he's now the owner of it, and so he can make the bracha of it. Of course, this applies to the first day of Sukkot, so it doesn't apply to the others, but the first day it has to be l'chol. Okay. Alright, so there's something similar over here, he says, okay? It doesn't say, you go to Yerushalayim, I'll give you a share. What he simply says, you know, bring it up, and there'll be food and drink and everything, and then afterwards he gives him something as a matana. He gives him also food and wine, etc., etc. Okay. Yeah, the idea is not to pay off a debt with the Master Shani. And the paying off the debt would be, you know, to pay him his wages, so to speak. Right, right. Well, that's also, it's a debt, right? Rav Omar, but Rav says, the Yolam, the Kodesh, Bekdusha, Shavis, that the fruits of Shavis, I don't know why it goes shifting from, you know, that's a problem always. He's talking about Shavuos, he brings in the parallel from Ma'aser Sheni, right? And all of a sudden, there's no transition, it's back again. So
in specifying just these
things,
as opposed to saying, just bring some food and drink and that's it.
Right.
And I'll pay you for it.
Right. No, it doesn't say I'll pay you for it.
Well, I mean,
okay. The Rav Amar, the Yolam, the Kodesh, Bekedusha, Shavis, that the fruit, the Shavis, is always, even the money that you would get would always be holy with the same sanctity as Shavis. With the Kokasha, the Chor Poel. And if you're asking me a kasha about the worker, he says, Poel. So in other words, this is what Rav is trying to bring out right now. Rav is trying to bring out the fact. Look, they were very nice in saying that under certain circumstances, right? The guy, for example, which means, we said that if, you know, go bring me some fruit, right? And then afterwards he gives him money, okay? He says, really, that money should not have been given because, what? The payers, right, that's meant to be not to do business with, okay?
So, used, but not to be
right. They should make money on the deal, okay? So why then, you know, are they more lenient to the workmen, right? So he says, Poel, the Le Nofish Agre, Le Konsuhur Abonin. He says, the worker who doesn't get very much money for the work that he gets, so the suggestion wants to make things tough on him by placing this fine upon him that, you know, he's not allowed to take it. Okay? But Chamorin, The donkey guys, he says, the nofesh are granted, they get a lot of guilt. So therefore, so with them, the sages, you know, made a knas. But as far as the Mishnah that we have with Yei Nesach is frankly more severe even, because they wanted to make sure that they don't have, you know, even a hint of Avodah Zarah connected with it. Okay, we'll stop at this point tonight. Okay, tonight is the... what is it? The 30th of June, right? 30th of May, May is 2007. Anyway, after 2 weeks of not, you know, being here, because last week was Shmuz, I hope everybody had a wonderful Yontif. So, we have to get back into the swing of it again. As we heard a few moments ago in the review, we see that they were talking about the fact if a person works, right, doing something that in general is prohibited, is he allowed to keep his wage or not? Can he have hanor from it or not? And we said, well, if the guy is a poor worker, then, you know, we'll give him a break. But if somebody makes a lot of money and doesn't really need that money, then in that particular case. And so this is what we're going to find out tonight. All right. The last subject matter, besides everything else that comes in, as for example Shemiyahs and so on that they threw in, and Maaseh Sheni, but essentially what started the whole argument? The question about the man who was hired by a goy to do what? He was hired, you know, to work with the Yai Nesach, right? And so therefore they would try to be as strict as they possibly could with it, and prohibiting, you know, any benefit from Yai Nesach if they possibly could, while still at the same time having some, what shall we say, humanitarian concerns as well, right? So we're going to have a similar situation right now in another area. Okay? So in Bordeaux. Okay. First question that was raised now that they're going to discuss is Sechoi L'Stam Yenom Mahu. Alright. We were talking about Yai Nesach, but if you remember, I told you that wine, which is not Jewish wine, today, for us, it's Stam Yenom. Stam Yenom. What is Stam Yenom? It means just ordinary wine, literally, right? But it means, you know, ordinary non-Jewish wine, okay? So the question is, of course, how should we behave towards Stam Yenom? Are we allowed to drink it? No, we know that that's prohibited, right? A Jew cannot drink anything except kosher wine. Okay. But the question is, if a Jew handles Stam Yenom, right? So the same principle that applied to Yai Nesach apply in this particular case. In other words, are we going to be as strict with him as far as being able to derive a padosa, or to derive, you know, some kind of financial benefit from it, as in the case of Yai Nesach, where we say that's absolutely prohibited. So here we have a story, first of all. All right. Says, okay, saying, you know, Sam Yenamahu says, so he says, Mi Amrin, do we say, Kaven de Usura Chomur Kiyen Kedayay Nesach, right? That inasmuch as the prohibition, of course, on drinking, you know, Sam Yain is as severe as that of drinking Yain Nesach, right? So, Sechore Nami Osur, so then in that particular case, the wage that he gets from working with it is also prohibited. Oh, Dilmore, or maybe he says, Horiel, the Tumose Kiel, inasmuch as the tumor, in other words, the, what shall we say, the uncleanliness or something like that that's involved in Stam Yenom is not as heavy, it's not as serious as, you know, in Yai Nesach. So, so in that case, we can also be Makel, as we would say. In other words, we could go easy as far as the wage that he earns, right? So that's the question. In the case of Stein Yenom, is he allowed to have benefits from it? In other words, can you pay him his wage from working with it or not? So he says, Toshma. All right, listen. Tell you a story. Dahu Gavro, there was a certain man, the Ogar Arbe Listan Yainam. What did he do? He rented out his boat for carrying Stam Yain. Okay? You know, they had to use it as a ferry or something like that to take it across from one place to another. So he rented his boat out for that purpose. Good evening. Good evening. And then what happened? So, Yavule Chite Biagwa. So, they paid him off by giving him wheat. They didn't give him money, but they gave him wheat as his reward for, you know, helping them carry the Stamia in, right, in the boat. So, also the Kabe the Rav Chista. So he came to Rav Chista because he didn't know, obviously, what, whether he's permitted to keep the money or not, or keep the wheat. Of course, with the wheat, he could have sold it also for money or something like that, so that, in other words, he was paid with a commodity instead of being paid with money, but the idea is the same. Yeah. Okay? Right. So Rav Chista heard the story, and Nomalei, and he said to him, he says, Zilkal Linhu Kabrinhu. He says, go out, burn the wheat, and bury it. In various ways. So Gemara first says, hey, the Lemolei Kabrinhu, he could have said to him, just scatter the wheat around. In other words, instead of burning it and burying it, you know, let the wind carry it wherever it wants to go, right? So, why did Rav Chista did not suggest that, right? So he says, also behu l'day takola. So people, what the result would be that people would sin as a result of it. How so? Because if the wheat was supposed to be destroyed,
yeah, but why would other people sin because of the wheat?
Because the idea is, according to Rav Chista, that even though it's Stam Yenot, right, but nevertheless, no Hanor can be derived, neither by the man nor by anybody else. They're very, very makpid when it comes to, you know, the Yain Nesef, okay? So, Rav Chista decided to be just as makpid, just as difficult, just as, you know, giving a severe interpretation, you understand? In the case of the Stein Yain.
So, his ruling is not the final ruling, though.
It's not the final ruling, no, no. I said before, you know, that you can have a ruling, but sometimes you moderate it because of, you know, humanitarian consideration. But right now we're talking about the theory. The theory. What is the theory? Why did Rav Chista say this? Namely, why did he say burn it and bury it? Why couldn't he simply say, for example, scatter it to the winds? So the answer is because people might pick it up, and they're picking up something that should have been destroyed. That's the answer. Okay. So maybe he could have suggested something else. He says, yeah, the Liklinhu, Livadrinhu. So, how about, for example, burning it and then scattering it? Not what he said, burn it and bury it, remember, but burn it and then scatter the ashes or whatever may be around. So he says, Dilma Mizable Behu. Okay? If he did that, maybe people would use this ash as fertilizer. In other words, they're still getting some kind of benefits from it. Okay? So maybe he could have said the following. So why don't you take the wheat and simply bury it as it is? So, Milo Tanan, haven't we learned before? And now they begin a case, which I have to tell you, the case that they bring in, to me is a little bit far-fetched, okay? But it's interesting to see how the association works over here. Okay? We said, they said, why couldn't he say, bury the wheat? So, Milo Tanan, didn't we learn in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, it says that Echad Evin Sheniskal Bo, Echad Eich Shenislo Olov, Echad Saif Shenerag Bo, Echad Sudo Shenehadag Bo, Kulom Nikburim Imo. Okay? What does it mean? Okay, I'm sure that you're aware of the fact that there are four different types of death penalties mentioned in the Torah, right? Can you rattle them off based on the on Yom Kippur? Skila. Skila, Sreifa, right? Cherev, Vechenek. Right, okay. Right, okay. Sreifa, Sreifa's also, right. Yeah, you don't burn him like Joan of Arc was burned, or the Inquisition. That particular type of penalty was enforced by pouring molten lead down the throat of the person, so that it burned him inwardly, and of course it killed him. But we don't know whether they did it or not. The point is that certainly was not that widespread, okay? But theoretically these things exist, right? So this is what he says, okay? Didn't we learn in Sanhedrin? He says that, for example, Echot Evan Shadiskalbo, right? A person, let's say, was stoned to death. That's what we call skila, right? So the stone with which he was stoned to death. The Echot H Shadisolov, or the tree, or the pole upon which he was hung, right? The Echot Sayef Shadirakbo, or the sword by which he was killed. The echot sudor, or the garment shenechnak bo, with which he was strangled, kulam nikborim imo. In any case, whatever brought about his death has to be buried together with the person who was condemned to death. So, in other words, could you make use of any of these things subsequently? No, they have to be buried together with the person. So, getting back to our parallel, so why couldn't he say, with the wheat to do what? Bury it. Nobody would have any hanor from it, right? So they say, Hosom, dekor kavre bevei dino. There, we're talking about the death penalty. We know that it is the court itself that mukhacha milsa da'arugei bez dedito. It's obvious, to everyone that the matter is that these people were condemned to death by the court. But hacha, here in the case of the wheat, lo mukhacha milsa, the people wouldn't know why was it buried. They would simply see, right? So that therefore, what did he say? Burn it and bury it. Okay. So now, of course, because people will come across, says the Gemara, they'll see wheat that was buried in the ground, right? So Amor, they'll say to themselves, Inish Ganav, a certain person stole this wheat, right? The I say, and what did he do? And he came and he buried it over here. No, Can you take from a ganav? Are you allowed to take the loot of a ganav? Are you allowed to take the loot of a ganav? Huh? Belongs to somebody. But what if we don't know to whom it belongs? I mean, if we know that it belongs to a certain person, naturally, what do you have to do with it? You have to return it, and the ganav has to pay two times, three, four or five times, depending upon what he stole, right? Okay. But what if we don't know who it belongs to? Then what? Huh? Then it's open season, exactly. So people would say, ah, somebody stole wheat. We don't know which field it came or anything like that, you understand? And so they would help themselves to it. And what is the concern of Rav Chista? He doesn't want anybody to have any hanoah whatsoever from this wheat. Okay. Irv asked the question before, is this the way we rule today? And the answer is no. We don't rule that way. As far as a person who works with goyish wine, he could still be paid. If he owns a liquor store, he's still in business, and so on. I don't have to tell you. I mean that there are Jews, you know, who sell non-kosher wine, and so on. So are we to penalize them by saying you're not allowed, you know, to keep any of the money that you know you earn on that? Of course, the answer is no. We don't do that. Right, right. It could very well be that in the Middle Ages they already couldn't paskin the way Rav Chista paskin, because they were living among Christians, let's say, in France and Germany and so on, right? And that being the case, then obviously they were restricted in what kind of business they could be in. So in that particular case, you know, the chances are that they had to make a parnosa, you know, from something like this. So I don't know whether Rashi sold trefa wine. This I don't think so, but who knows? It doesn't apply to beer, if that's what you're afraid of.
No, I'm talking about anything.
Or seltzer.
Let's say somebody sells clothing, which is not not kosher.
Yeah, the question is shot this.
So what are we selling those?
That's a good question about the sale of shots. To a Jew, it would not be proper.
What is proper?
It would not be proper.
But it's very widespread.
Of course it's widespread. There's no question about it. So what do they do? In New York, for example, there are, you know, from Jews who own clothing stores, right?
We're not talking about the
Frommies. Yeah, no. But still, they're getting their clothing from where? From Italy, from Czechoslovakia, from God knows where. You know, they make all kinds of clothes today. A lot of stuff is no longer made in the United States. We know that. Right. So, and there's still a prohibition in the Torah against a garment, which is what? All right, woolen linen, shatnez, we call it, right? So you have shatnez laboratories in New York and a couple of other places that the businessman himself will pay for the expense of having the garbage.
Okay. How about shoes?
Shoes, it doesn't apply.
Huh?
It doesn't apply to shoes.
Goy makes shoes. And
yeah, but that doesn't apply. There's no prohibition on wearing goyish shoes.
Why would there be a person?
No.
He's making an oath from somebody and something else?
No, we're not trying to prohibit Jews from doing business with goyim. No. It's only in certain things where a prohibition of the Torah is involved that's a problem. You understand? But it's not a problem with Jews. That a Jew should not do. There's no question about that. You should not, and yet I hate to tell you, I mean, how many Jews are selling non-kosher meat?
What's that?
Yeah, you know, supermarket owners, for example, right. Right, who, you know, they have a supermarket, they have goyish meat, trefa meat, and technically a Jew is not supposed to profit from the sale of trefa meat.
But he's allowed to sell
trefa wine, so he's the Stabiator, right. He is allowed to do that. It's bottled. You understand? It's not that he has a cask in which he has to pour it out or something like that. We don't do business that way anymore. Today, what do? You know, everything is bottled, that's all.
Bottled and sealed.
Yeah, bottled and sealed, right. No, no. Question is only, are you allowed to profit? So... But we're making right now with that, right? Yeah.
It's the fact that the wine is encapsulated,
right.
And the Jew doesn't touch
right.
The wine, that
yeah.
Is price
right.
Allowable to sell it. But if you
yeah.
Were to take it from the cask, just like you would handle.
Well, they handle it, right. So that's already, that would be a little bit more questionable.
Do
yeah.
They make any provision for the person who probably is poor and is doing this work for Goy and doesn't have a panosa?
Well, that's exactly the issue that we've been discussing.
Yeah,
what did we say?
The
that they were makel for it.
Yeah, well,
they were makel. They said
they
could keep the money, right. Yeah. You have to give them a panosa, right?
That's right.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's it. Even with the supermarket selling tray for meat, it sort of brings in what we said before. If you remember what they said on top of the at the bottom of the previous page, if he let's say he's selling Yain Nesach, right? Well, he's working at Yain Nesach. So, if the boss says to him, right, that you take this Yain Nesach and you work with it and so on and so forth, and I'll pay you, you know, for it, you should refuse. But what if the boss says to him, I want you to take this barrel and take this barrel from here and put it over there or something like that, and the barrel contains Yain Nesach? So what did we say? He could keep the money for that. Okay? So the same thing, I mean, in the supermarket, there are other things that he can definitely make his parnasa from. So then this becomes like swallowed up, we would say, in the total. It's a tough thing to explain, but nevertheless you get the picture. I mean, they're trying to make it easy. But Rav Chista happened to be what? He was a machbir. Okay, so what are you going to do? He was a machbir. Right. So, now they come to another story, also has to do with a problem over here. The Vei Rabbi Yonai, right, the school of Rabbi Yonai, in other words, the Talmidim over there, the Chachamim who learned in Rabbi Yonai's yeshiva over there, so Yasfei Perish Vies Me'aniim for Ulahu Bishminis. This goes back to something that we discussed. We know that you're not allowed to make a living, as we say, from shvius, right? Something that grows in the seventh year in Eretz Yisrael. As we learned, and as you know, the Gemara said, and also as it says in the Torah itself, you know, it says le'ochlo, right? In other words, the food that grows in the seventh year is to be eaten. It's not for lo l'schora, right? It's not meant that you should do business with it, merchandising with it, you understand? So we also have another law in connection with it, and that is that you can keep food in your house only up to the time when there's no more food left in the fields for people. Because the fields, as we say, they're hefker in the seventh year. Everybody can come and pick whatever he wants to eat, right? But once it's gone, then what are you obligated to do? You have to take it out of your house, whatever you have stored in, and put it out there so that the people, and the same thing applies to animals as well, will have what to eat. Talking about the laws of Shavuos.
Yeah, I understand.
In Eretz Israel.
Taking what out where and putting it out for
the owner of it.
The owner of it. You own a property, right? You own a field in Eretz Israel, okay? And the seventh year comes, okay?
Right.
Okay. So.
He doesn't take the food. He leaves the food.
He gathers food from it. From the field, he gathers food from the field, right?
Why would he do that?
To eat.
Well, he's not supposed
But he can also store in his house a certain amount of food in addition beyond what he needs at the moment. But remember what we said. He cannot do any business with that. And he is required, when there's no more anything left in the field, to take whatever he has in the house and put it out so that not only he, but anybody else can come and share it. Look, we're not living in Eretz Israel in Shavuos. You don't understand that. But this is technically what the you know what the observance is supposed to be.
Any of the food that's there in the field on
the 18th. No. He's allowed to take it to eat, but he's not allowed to take it to do business with.
I thought it was prohibited altogether.
No.
He's got to eat too.
Not allowed to work the field. No. You can't plow, you can't spade, you can't do this or that, and so on with a few.
Right.
What grows by itself? Well, things will grow by themselves, okay? Or you try to plant enough prior to the beginning of Shavuos so that they'll have plenty growing in Shavuos without having to work the field.
Yes. I think I understand this. This is what you just said, where you take out the grain you've gathered and put it in the house.
Right.
I mean, what is the measure of this? I mean, how is a person supposed to know how much is going to be sufficient for he and his family? And how much he could take out to share with everybody else. Do you follow me? I mean, are you supposed to take out everything, everybody comes and eats it, and then we all start together afterwards? Or are you allowed to keep back? You say, I'll keep back what I think will be the next 4 months without put out anything else?
No. As I say, at the beginning, he can keep things in his house. But the moment that there's, as long as there's still food in the, as soon as things are still growing in the field so that people can come and eat it, take and eat it, then in that particular case he can still keep food in the house for his own purposes. But, after all, he has to eat too, he and his family, right? However, when there's no longer any food in the fields, then in that particular case, he has to take whatever is stored in his own home, put it out in the fields, make it hefker. He can take for himself, but also others can also take. He can't keep everything for himself anymore. Just what he needs for his own immediate needs.
This brings up a lot of questions.
Of course it does. Technically, you have to put it out, and then you take it back the same as anybody else. But only what you need.
For that day.
Yes.
And then that's it.
Right. Right.
Wow. Then everybody.
Yeah. This is why Shviis is a very difficult business to know it as well. This is why, in order to help the economy, for example, they have different things. To begin with, there was the business of selling the land officially to a goy. So Eretz Yisrael did not belong to a goy. But needless to say, many people refuse to accept that kind of a heter. You understand? Because they say it's a subterfuge and they refuse to abide by it. So what do they eat? Well, what they have stored up from the sixth year, they can still eat, you understand? And today, because a lot of food comes from other countries or from Arabs or something like that, then in that particular case, that's what they have to live on. So it's permitted to have food that's made in America, in England, in Australia, and so on and so forth, brought in territory as well, and so on, right. Or it's also permitted to buy from the Arabs, because they are not required to keep Shviis, even though they live in Eretz Yisrael.
Realize that this is even stricter than what Paro and Yosef did during the famine in Egypt, right? There they accumulated the grain, and they used it during the famine.
Yes.
You're saying you take all the grain, you put it out, and when it's gone, if I understand you correctly.
At the beginning, you can keep grain in the house. But as long as there's still grain in the field for people to gather. But once there's no longer anything there, that's the time when you have to take it out of your house.
Wow.
And share with other people. That's the idea. You share it together.
If they take it all and then allocate it to
don't forget, during the sixth year, you plant as much as you possibly can so that there will be a big enough harvest in order to tide you over.
The question about selling to a non-Jew, isn't it the whole purpose among other things? Isn't the land supposed to lie fallow?
Yes.
So if you're selling it to a non-Jew, you're not resting the land.
This is true. But why do you sell it? You sell it in order to enable a Jew to work that land. You understand? As long as the land does not belong technically to a Jew at that particular moment, so a person can work for a non-Jew.
Work for a non-Jew and
right. That was the heter. As I say, thousands and thousands do not abide by this heter. And so Shviis is always a difficult time.
Right.
Well, it's a lot easier today, as I said, because you can get food from other countries and so on.
Because if you don't work the land, and that's also you're not doing what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to be more fertile.
Yes.
Correct.
And Shviis is coming up this coming year, I think, is Shviis, if I'm not mistaken. So, and I was in Eretz Israel 1 year also doing Shviis. And, my daughter and loads of other people are very particular not to buy things that are grown by a Jew in Shviis and Eretz Israel. So you have to rely upon others, right? Yeah. Stores that are under the strict supervision of the Rabbanut, will be very careful as to, when the food came in and so on and so forth. Right. But that's a difficult situation, no question.
I have forgotten this one before. I remember.
Right. Yeah. it's a wonderful idea behind it, that the land also deserves its Shabbos. It's how the Torah puts it, you know. The Shav Sahar is the land itself observes its own Shabbos, you understand? Yeah. But when it comes to reality, at times it's difficult.
Okay.
So we have to hope that there'll be a very good crop this year, so that, you know, at least it'll relieve the situation when Shavuos comes in next year. Okay, you know what, I think I'm going to stop at this point. I'm a little tired. Okay, tonight is the 6th of June, if I'm not mistaken, and the year 2007. We are continuing now, Gemara Vedazora, Daf Samach Beis, Omid Beis, in other words, 62B, and we're continuing a little below the middle of the Daf over there. Now we'll go again into the problem of Shavuos, and then it goes off on a tangent, okay? As we will discover. All right. We left off over there where it says Devei Rabbi Yadai. Okay? Devei Rabbi Yadai. Devei Rabbi Yadai. Okay, do you see where it is?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. The line begins actually with Kivra Hocha, but that referred to the previous Inyan, you know, that people will know that the person who was executed by the Beis Din, right, is buried over here in this particular cave. So that had to do, if you remember, with the fact, the problem of the wheat. You remember the wheat? The guy, he rented out his boat to carry a cask of wine, right?
Right,
in payment he received the wheat, and then when he came to Rav Chisda, Rav Chisda said, do it, you can't use it, bury it.
Right.
Burn it and bury it. Right. That's what he said. And all the others suggested forms of disposal, you know, we're disposed of, right?
Yeah,
because why? Because we said Avodah Zorah is such a terrible business, you know, that you have to be very, very strict, more than usual. Okay, so now we continue. Devei Rabbi Yadai, usually when you have Devei Rabbi so and so, it means students in the school of. But maybe it means what it means literally, meaning the household of Rabbi Yonai. In either case, it would be okay how you take the expression. Okay. But what do they do? So they say, Yatzve Perish Vis Me'adiyim for Elohu Bishmilis. Okay. What they did was to borrow fruits that had grown in the seventh year from poor people. Okay. And this was before this whole business of Biur, that I went to very great length last week, where I explained that when the time of Biur comes, in other words, when there's no more produce left in the field, then at that time you have to take the food out of your own house and make it hefka so that everybody will have something to eat, okay? But here it was, as Rashi points out, before Biur yet, so that people still had stuff in their home. So what did they do? They borrowed from the poor people some fruit that had grown. Of course, when I say fruit, it doesn't really mean, you know, fruit. It could also be wheat or anything else, you know, but something that had grown.
Yeah.
Right, produce that had grown, okay?
Right.
And when did they repay it? They repaid it in the eighth year. In other words, after Shavuos was over, then they gave the poor people, you know, whatever they had borrowed. I don't mean the same thing, but, you know, a similar kind of produce in return. Obviously, they're not going to give the same thing that they had borrowed, because it would spoil if it would stay around for a year, you know. And no balabusta is going to keep it for a year in the house, especially if they didn't have the refrigeration in those days. So, but what it means, it's quite obvious.
They
Let's say they borrowed a bushel of apples or something like that. So in the eighth year, then they gave back a bushel of apples, you know, to the...
So what are they doing? They're helping the poor people.
They're helping the poor people.
Because they had stuff that would spoil.
Right. That's correct. And also, it gave them an opportunity in the eighth year to have something to eat. Because if you eat everything up in the seventh year, you know, what's going to happen? Yeah. The Torah itself faces that problem. Mm-hmm. Because it says, you know, in trying to explain the idea of Shmius to the people of Israel, you take a look at Pasha Bahar over there, where you have the, it says, you know, and if you say, right, Ma Noichal, what are we going to eat in the eighth year, right? Hein lo nizra. After all, we're not even planting anything. We're not even able to reap anything, you know, in the seventh year. Yeah. So the Rebbeinu Shlomo says, "For tzivises birchosu yelochem," command literally my blessing unto you. In other words, I'll give you this blessing that you'll have so much to eat. So much food in the sixth year that you'll be able to put it aside, and it'll last even into the eighth year. It's a miracle. Okay. So, they repaid him in the eighth year. Also, so people came, and number later, Rabbi Yochanan, and they complained to Rabbi Yochanan. They said, Omalahu, they said to him, Yehos hein avdin, are they doing the right thing? And what did he answer them? He answered them, yeah, they do the right thing. So what is the problem? Problem is, as we already said, since you cannot, you know, Shmius, the produce of Shmius, right? It says, le'ochlo, it is to be eaten. Ve'loi l'schoira, right? And you're not allowed to do any business with it. This is like a form of business. And not only that, there is a fine, a kenosis, we would say in Hebrew, that the rabbis imposed upon anybody who did business in Shvius, that his money is hefker. He cannot have any value, whatever. So, even the fruits then, even this produce then, these people, you know, they were complaining, it shouldn't be considered hefker, right? Shouldn't it be because... Why? Because they're doing business in the seventh year.
Paying the debt.
Okay.
Sorry,
business. They didn't. Okay. You're right. But, and Rabbi Yochanan agreed, and he said they did the right thing. But what were the people protesting about, you see? What was their complaint? Why did they come to Rabbi Yochanan in the first place? Because they felt that what you know, this household of Rabbi Yadi were doing, that they were actually like doing commercial business, you
but
know, with the fruits of Shvius, right?
The sixth year, not the seventh year.
No, they didn't borrow in the sixth year.
The seventh year, right?
In the seventh year, they borrowed these fruits to repay afterwards. Okay, okay. So he said, "All right, they did the right thing." And this is where it goes off on a tangent. He says, and similarly, right, be esdan mutar, right. And similarly, he says, in the case of an esdan, it's also permitted. So now I have to explain what is esdan. So we have to go back to the Torah. Okay, esdan, by the way, is you. What would the root letters be? The answer is that, you know, the tof nun. What is tof nun?
Tof nun?
Yeah.
Tof nun.
Means give. So esdan zona means literally a gift that you give to a prostitute. Okay?
You give.
Yeah, you give her a gift for her services, you know. Okay? So, now the question is, you see, the Torah says, Loisavi esdan zoyna, right, the Mechir Kelev, based on Hashem Lekecha. You're not allowed to bring either, in English they translate it, the hire of a harlot. It's a fancy expression. Right. Mechir Kelev is literally the price that you pay for a dog. You buy a dog, okay? Right, you're not allowed to bring it based on Hashem Lekecha to the house of the Lord your God. In other words, to the Beis Hamikdash, okay? In other words, you're not allowed to take an animal which would be given as payment, because payment was not necessarily in dollar bills, you understand? Okay. They could also give something of value as well. If you remember, I don't know, there's a story in Bereishis about Yehuda and Tamar.
Yeah.
Remember that story? Okay.
Yeah,
where, I mean, she disguises herself as a harlot, if you remember, because he had not come, you know, he had not given her the son in marriage, as what people call like Yibum, right?
Right.
So, as a result, you know, she disguised herself as a harlot, and Yehuda had relations with her, and he didn't have on the spot, you know, what to pay him, but, you know, he said that he would send her a goat, Gedi Yizib. And what did she do? She took a pledge from him. What was the pledge?
The
signet ring and the staff, correct. Okay? So, we see then from this, what? That you don't necessarily have to pay off in dollar bills. You can pay off by giving a sheep, a goat, or something or other. And so on. Okay.
So, tender.
Exactly, legal tender. All right. So, now the question is, can a zona, prostitute, then take this animal and bring it as a korban in the Beis HaMikdash? Would that be in violation of Lo Yisovi Esnan Zayna Beis HaRashem Olakecha? Get the picture?
Yeah, I see.
Okay.
But she earned it.
Well, we're going to see how they look at it. They're going to dissect this part right now. Okay. Hang on to your seats. I said, hang on to your seats. All right. So anyway, first of all, right, Rabbi Yochanan implies what? That the Esther Mutter, that it is permissible for her to do what? To take this, right, and to bring it as a comment on the Beis HaMikdash. Now, how could he violate something which is written specifically in the Torah that what? It's not to be brought, right? You understand? It says, Laisovi, don't bring, okay? So he says, okay. Netanya. So he cites a Baraisa. Okay. Baraisa says, the Norsan law, the Leibolel, the man gave her a sheep, and then he did not have any intercourse with her. Okay?
Yeah, okay.
Or, Bo'oleho, he had intercourse with her, but the Leibolel is Nona. He did,